This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
You don't want to sing again?
Be encouraged no matter what's going on. Jesus gonna work it out. My voice.
I love it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I am here with the Bowmans, Lakrita and Charles. We are continuing our journey through their life. This is us.
This is us.
Can't deny it. It is you.
It is me.
That's right.
It is us.
It is you guys.
So I think the last time we left off, we talked about our marriage,
how
everything worked out, and then how we got my son in my life immediately.
Yep.
And then eventually, I think we talked about his son coming in to his life. No?
I don't think we talked about that. I know we talked about the wedding day and how your son came, and then you didn't know that. Was it right at the same time that your son came back?
Afterwards.
His son came back afterwards.
Okay.
We had been married about a year and a half probably before his son came into our lives.
How did that happen?
His mother had told something that my background and things happened. And his mother had told me that I'm going to keep him away from you.
Oh.
You're not going to see him again. Mm. And that means his brother, too. You know, I accept him, his brother, though. I respect him as a young man. And she's seen us going in a... She filed papers on me for child support, and she's seen us going in there. And she's seen us on the newspaper. She's seen us on the news.
That's right. I do remember that part. Yeah.
And next thing she thought, like, oh, they had some money, so she went after me for child support.
Oh, I think we did talk about that a little bit. Yeah. So then you start seeing him.
Yeah. And start taking him places he'd never been before.
So how did that, like, how did that start off? Was it kind of like an awkward thing? Did it, were you like?
It wasn't awkward for me.
Okay.
No, it wasn't awkward for me, you know.
And how long had you guys been apart at this point?
What you mean?
How long had you been apart? How many years had you been apart as a son and father?
Well, I guess he was around five, and he came in my life around when he was like seven.
Okay, so not a long time. 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. How did the visitation things work? Did it just fall into line? Did you guys get into a rhythm at all?
No, it wasn't about visitation. It was about him wanting to come over, and I would come and get him, and he would be with me, and take him back home to his mama, who chose to raise him.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that he came back into your life. So you guys had to have been experiencing as a couple kind of a interesting transition. You're learning how to be married. You're learning how to be a mom. You're getting your son back in your life. So you're learning how to be a dad. Then you're learning how to be a family together.
And we're learning how to recover from our own tragedies and our own traumas.
Wow. That's a lot.
You know, because we both had our own tragedies and our own traumas.
Yes.
And our own triggers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, my drug of choice was not drugs. You know, my drug of choice was prison. And so trying to learn how to navigate new responsibility along with taking care of myself, my husband, you know what I mean, my new son in my life, his son, trying to now become all those things. If you're not careful, those things can become overwhelming.
Yes.
And they can create relapse, and they can create triggers and setbacks and, you know what I'm saying, emotional stuff. And I think that I can only speak for me because we got married in 93, you know what I'm saying, and all of these, we met in 93, we got married in 93, my son came back in my life in 93. His son probably was about maybe 94. You know what I mean? So within less than a year of marriage, we had all these things.
Wow. I don't know how you guys kind of navigated that, because I don't know. For you guys, did you have expectations as far as like being a parent and what the relationship with the child should be, or vice versa?
I didn't. I mean, because my son's father told me I would never see my son again.
So every day.
So I had accepted. I had accepted that. You got to realize one of my Achilles heels was rejection and abandonment. So right. They were my friends. I knew how to navigate rejection and abandonment. So to me, him saying that was like, okay, I can deal with that. I mean, I don't like it, but I can deal with it.
Did you guys learn compromise? Like, I'm sure all marriages do, but how did that look for you guys? Navigating compromise and learning to live together.
I was raised with two parents. I was raised with a good father,
yeah,
and a good mother,
yeah,
and we had siblings. You know what I'm saying? That the way we was raised to love one another, and that's the way I love my brother. The two I love with my oldest sister and my oldest brother, because I could do no wrong with them. You know. And, and I had a father that loved us and a mother. And they lived to death, did in part. In other words, he buried mama and we buried him.
So what were the lessons you learned out of that in your new marriage? Like, what were you saying to yourself as you guys are navigating change? I just know when you're first married, typically for any couple, is challenging because you're learning how to, like, toothpaste, how you like squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube, you know, just the little things and the big things. So you guys had a lot of big things. Even
we had no big tubes of toothpaste. You know, but now for me, I look, if I was to look back at it, I would say that, you know, sometimes when you make a decision, you have to stick with it. So yeah. in that when I found out a lot in that marriage with Akrita, and one thing, I mean, we're here,
yes,
by the grace
are.
Of God.
But amen, amen.
My thing is that, you know, when you say one thing that I did, when I was with a friend named Sonny, he died, and everything, is that I want to be very close to the vows that I said at my wedding.
Yes.
You know, because I said that under God. You know, and I had to be, and I had to also understand that, you know, there's no rejection there for me. You know, when I said them wedding vows.
Yeah.
And that was for me. That's for me.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, life don't say, sometimes in marriage, you don't act like you're married. But I still got to be a husband and a father.
Yeah.
No matter what, that's my role. And that's the road I choose to take.
So even when things were challenging, that's where you were landing, right?
That's where I'm going to stay.
Yep. What about you, Lakrita? What were some of your remembrances of that early on and trying to navigate some of that stuff?
Well, unfortunately, I was raised by a single mom and a foster care. So my experience with a man, my first experience with a man was not a good experience when he was sexually abusing me. So
right.
I didn't have a lot of trust with men. You know what I mean? I just know, as I shared before, that I made a decision that the next man that I would be with would be my husband. Sometimes we can make self-prophecies. And make decisions. And I agree with Charles, but once you make the decision, you're responsible for the choice you made, good, bad, indifference, ugly. You know, my mother used to say, you make your bed, you lie in it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so I only had an older sister, which left the house very early. So I kind of felt like I was the only child. We had lots of cousins. And so to navigate becoming married marriage to me, I've learned, you know, I now understand why people wear veils. Because a veil, when a woman wears the veil, it really is a representation when it talks about Jesus toward the veil. So you can come to him straight up. But when you're in a marriage and you're walking down that aisle, you don't know what you're walking into. And you know who you're walking to, but you don't know what you're walking into. And so I feel like that veil that women wear is a somewhat a covering, but it is also a shadow of what is to come. And so, like, you ask about toothpaste, this, that, and the other. Of course, you're going to learn how to compromise and negotiate and how things are. And, you know, everybody has their own way of doing things.
Right.
And so I can only speak my memory of when we first got married. When we first got married, Charles lived already with this lady named Miss Vanetta.
He lived in her house.
Oh, gotcha.
Lived in her house.
Clarify
when I say
that.
To me, it's a community. It was a community living.
Yeah.
He lived in her house.
Yeah.
Her son lived in the
basement.
Basement.
And then she had a worker that worked for her. Not worked for her, but he had a business, and he had in another part of the house, a big house we did.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of big on Woodburn and Ruth. Where I grew up at, like two blocks away. So, yeah.
Got you. So you had some experience with learning how to live with somebody and compromise and all that stuff.
That's when I made the decision that if I'm going to be with somebody, I'm going to be with somebody. And it happened to be her. You know what I'm saying? So, but in the process of that, I'm going to share this. In the process of that, My waywardness and my behavior and my character took me to a whole different, darker place. You understand? And I realized it was the drugs that was doing that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was taking them. It was my choice. And I was taking it, and it was taking me away from God till I joined the program. And everything, one thing about it, some people have to be hit over the head with a mallet and not a rubber hammer, because everything start coming into place. I start seeing things once I realized I'm not going to be with no women for a year, and I did. I stopped being in relationships and everything, started going to meet and started doing this thing. But then when I met her, you know, come find out that the guy that was running, that had the building, that was running the program, he knew her from Hamilton. He was her pastor. And he the one that ended up marrying us. So, and then I met her sister on that time that I said, on that Easter, when she fixed me something to eat. And that, but I'm like, all these things start connecting. I'm like, you know, the food tastes just like it was my mother cooked it.
That was a sign. That was your sign.
One thing. And then I became close to them. Her family started calling me Uncle Charles and everything, which my family did. My family really didn't want to have too much to do with me at this time, you know.
Right,
I've changed, but I said I changed so many times that it was hard for them to believe it.
Right,
so now that I've changed, I've really changed in my heart. I wanted them to believe, but I couldn't force them to.
No.
But her family became my family.
Hmm.
You know, her family became my family. You know, I'm talking about, and I loved them like a family. And it just let me know, and I seen how her process was in her, with her family. All of them were like adopted. Is that right to say that?
Yeah.
Adopted and everything, but they were closer than blood families.
That's right. They were a chosen family.
I'm looking at this. I'm like, hey, my family ain't like that.
Yeah.
But hers is, and they were close. I went to their family reunions, and that's when we met her. One time we met her mother, and things just start happening in my life. You understand? Yeah. Now, the door could have been closed on that a long time ago, but with me with my eyes open and start seeing these things, I'm like, okay, God, you're involved in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, so my experience was different, as he was saying. My family, they, like, my sister and I were adopted into that family. Everyone else were Broaddus's. They were the Broaddus's. My sister, my mom used to go with my sister's uncle. And back in those days, I guess, they call it foster care now or adoption. Back then, I don't know what they called it. You know what I'm saying? I don't really know, because it wasn't like my mother had legal papers on either one of us.
But we were her daughters.
Right? We were her daughter. But I'm just saying, we legally, either one of our parents could have came and got us at any time, and there wouldn't have been nothing that she could have done, because she had no legality over us. My mother dropped me off at her house one day, as people know my story, and never did come back and get me. My sister, Linda, who went, like I said, our mother, Mary, who went with her uncle, Johnny, her mother decided that Linda could go with my mother, Mary, at 14. So, you know what I mean? And so we all came to Hamilton with my Uncle John and my Uncle Mike. You know what I'm saying? We had, you know, so those were our, you know, so eventually then we had Aunt Loretta, Aunt Ida, Aunt Geneva, Aunt Carrie, Aunt Mildred. So those were, so I grew up with a lot of cousins, but I didn't have a lot of siblings. And so they were all our families. And so my mom, I will say this, the way she couldn't have children. So I think that for her, of course, we were her daughters, and nobody would have known the difference. You know what I mean? That we were not her daughters. And as Charles says, but our family was the kind of people, they just accepted people. They just was that kind of family. Like, they never seen us as not their family. We were their family.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yep. And so we were Mayor Helen's children. You know what I mean? We were their nieces. We were, regardless to, for me, whether I got in trouble, you know, my sister used to call me the bad seed, because she was kind of like the good sister, and I was the one who was constantly from, you know, childhood, because of my traumas, was constantly getting in trouble, was going to girls' school, was getting sent away, would run away, would steal, would do this, would do that. You know what I'm saying? But just constantly, it was constantly unraveling our family dynamics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so when, you know, when it came to Charles and I, and we, it was the same way. My family didn't, I didn't really have a lot of family, but my family didn't trust me either. You know what I mean? Abandonment and rejection was my friend. I didn't really care. Like that was like not a priority for me, that they cared. You know, when, even this time in my journey to getting better and to getting whole, in the beginning, I was not focused on what they said and what, you know, I was just doing the best I could to stay above the water. You know what I'm saying? I'm treading the water, keeping my head above the water, trying not to do what I used to do, going through the therapy I need to go through, going to the groups I need to go through, going to the Bible studies. I was doing what I needed to do. But one day, my sister, I'll never forget the day she handed me a key to her house. And that, to me, said, I trust you.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'll never forget. I was going to visit her, and when I was leaving, she handed me a key. You know what I mean? And so that day said something to me, that she trusted me, and that, okay, that now it's important to do what I'm doing, not just for me, but for the dynamics of relationship and familyship that I have. And so from there on, I just began to move forward. And like I said, when we got married, my family was there, Johnny on the spot. They, the cooking, the this, the that, whatever we needed, they was there. And so, you know what I mean? We just, and so then in our marriage, as you, just the questions you ask is how adjusting, I think learning how to just become, and we can sit here and not tell, yeah, was it a struggle? Hell yes. You know, we ain't going to act like it wasn't a struggle. I can't speak, you know what I'm saying? What may not have been a struggle for him, but it was definitely a struggle for me. You know, learning what it's like, because that's why the Bible says becoming one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not automatically one.
One. Yeah, right. You got to become, because you got to die to yourself. You got to die to certain things.
Yeah.
You got to look at your life and decide, you know, how am I navigating this? And so with all the other stuff, you know, and then let's not forget, okay, we got married in 93. The Lord gave me a vision in 94. We started the ministry in 95.
Right, right.
So, you know what I mean? So here we are 30 years later, 2025. So all of that coming at the same time, you it's something that I heard today that was for me, like I listen to I read a lot of books. I like to learn. And so I was listening as I was walking today to a podcast, and it was talking about, you know, certain things in your life, when they come, you don't invite them. You know what I'm saying? They just come into your life. And when they get there, it's like a door that opens up. Charles said it just now about, you know, God had to be in it, because you can't see what's going to happen when it's happening. That's why they call it hindsight, because hindsight, you can kind of see that when it was all going on for me, I was always wondering, how am I going to navigate all of this? But I realize now, naturally, I'm gifted in a lot of things. You know what I mean? I'm a gifted person, and I'm able, as Charles said, when he first saw me out the window with doing his car, I'm very organized. I'm very administrative. I got vision.
Yep.
I'm a strategist. I can, you know what I mean? So I don't get, and because I wasn't so emotional, because I had shut my emotions off, a lot of times I didn't get anxious or overwhelmed with stuff. I just try to fix it. Or figure it out, if that makes sense.
It does. And in the story that I hear really from both of you, is you are both kind of on the same path. You both had made a decision to strive towards change. Mm-hmm. You were following after Christ. You weren't letting anything get in your way. Like, you know, some people may have like just relaxed at that point. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you found each other as God would ordain it. And then, like you said, a year later, then you're starting the ministry stuff. So I think some of what I was just trying to pull out was just, you guys are such a great example of individually and together of waiting on God and trusting God for everything. Everything in your life. Like, you guys weren't looking for each other. You were both determined that God had you on the right path. And then, bam. Do you know what I mean? And the signs for that came out of a meal that tasted like your mother's cooking. Like, that to me, you've said that a couple of times. So what I hear in that is that was a sign for you that, hey, this is food like my mom's. This is somebody I should stay connected to, and her family and the whole thing. So if I'm reading that right.
God revealing himself to me.
Yeah.
In certain instances and certain things, that he's revealing himself to me and showing me that everything, I didn't leave anything from behind. I'm still bringing it forward.
Ooh, that's
I'm not
good.
Bringing it to you the way you want it.
Yeah.
I'm bringing it to you the way you need it.
The way you need it.
You know, so, and that's happened. And it was something that she had mentioned too about trust.
Yeah,
that was an important thing. I had a friend. He died, and I can't mention his name, but he was how he invited me over his house. I had around 60 days clean, working towards doing my fourth step, but he took a connection with me. He helped me. He wrote a letter for me to get the place that I stayed at, you know, and I still got the letter. You know, and a lot of things about it. And then one day he said, "Damn, I ain't got nothing to drink." He said, "Let me go get some pops and stuff and water. You want something from the store?" I said, "I'll take some chips and stuff. Come on, let's go." He said, "Where you going?" I said, "I'm going with you to the store." He said, You can stay here." And then you gonna let me stay here in your house? And I'm 6 months, 90 day clean. I'm like, "You gonna let me stay here in your house while you gone?" He said, "Yeah, what's wrong with that?" He said, "I'll be back." And he left. And left me in the house. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, this is unbelievable. you know, that I'm in a place now where somebody could trust me. Not only that, it was somebody else that gave me a key to his house.
Wow.
He cried when he did it, though. And I don't know what the tears was for. But he gave me a key to his house. I never used it. I never used that key to get in this house.
But that had to have meant, like, quite a lot for someone to trust you so much to give you a key when you felt like you, maybe in past, had destroyed so much trust with so many people.
It did. It did.
Yeah.
It did.
So you guys are married. You guys had... Now, I know you were going to Christ Emmanuel. Did you just come along to Christ Emmanuel, or were you already there?
It's like being shepherd. I followed her there after that. Yeah. Then we just end up there.
And you guys went to their Bible college, correct?
We went through all their catechism classes. We went through another person. We went through Christ Emmanuel's catechism classes. We went through Talbot House's. All the Talbot House's classes for you know, like CDAs, and, you know, right now they call it peer recovery CDAs, but we back then it was called substance abuse training, conflict management. We went through all. Neil Tillo sponsored us as we had got the vision to open up the house. He sponsored us to go through all their classes, and I mean, Talbot House had, I think they still do have a training institution, but they had just opened it up. And so we went through every class for about 2 years. We was in every class there was, like every training we was getting training for all the stuff we were about to do.
So had you had the vision for the ministry at this point?
God had given me the vision. I talked to Neil Tillo. He mentored me.
Gotcha.
Charles had already been working. When I met Charles, Charles was working in the field at Cat House.
Oh, okay.
So right, Charles, you were, when I met you.
For 4.5 years.
Very cool.
Yeah, Charles was working at, he worked at Cat House. When I met him, he had a part-time job working at Cat House.
And then became full-time.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's the Center for Addiction Treatment. The acronym is CAT, so they call it Cat House. And somebody asked me that one time, what's Cat House?
Yeah.
Center for Addiction Treatment.
Yeah. Exactly. And so for me, yeah, I had the vision, and Talbot House was a place because I went through the Talbot House. And so it was a place I volunteered at and gave back because I just was grateful. And they always say you can only keep what you have by giving it away. And so the way that I would, you know, give back give back through Talbot House. And when the Lord gave me the vision one day in church in April of 1994, I was in church. I had this, somebody always asked, how do you know it was, and I ain't even going to say it was the vision that I had as much as the voice that I heard. The same voice I heard in prison when it says you'll never have definition of meaning till you come back to the source is the same voice I heard that day in worship when it says, would you be willing to go back into the darkness and help be the light to someone else's darkness? You know where the rocks are. You know where the snakes are. You know where the, you know,
all the stuff.
You know where it's at. Yeah. And I was like, hecky no, I'm not going back there. Why would I do that? No, that's crazy to me. Because to me, going back would mean not going forward.
Yeah.
So, like, that sounds, you know, I didn't understand what all that meant. But that was, and people always say, how do you know it was the voice of the Lord? Well, because it sounded like me, and it was gentle to me, and it was really unctioning me with a question, not a command. You know what I mean? It was inviting. Just like it was inviting me from prison, it was inviting me to a journey. And so I said, hecky no. And then we know the story. I went to a women's conference. It was confirmed. I came back. By that time, Charles and I had moved from Ruth and moved on to Greenlawn. And we had this little bitty apartment that we was on the third floor. It had a small living room, a bedroom, and a bathroom. That's all it had.
Wow.
And a little kitchen. And a little kitchen. And a small little kitchen. Very small.
A wash club.
It was so small. It was probably not as big as this room.
You had to about bend your knees.
It was, because it was at the top. And so, no, it was almost like an attic.
Yeah, wow. It was an attic.
I believe it was an attic. And so, an attic. And so, but they
she
had,
decorated.
But she had renovated it and created it. And, you know, and so we moved. That was our first house together. That was our first apartment together. You know what I'm saying?
What was the name on it? Green Lawn, you said?
It was Green Lawn Avenue.
Green Lawn Avenue.
Green Lawn Avenue. That was our first one. We moved from Ruth, where it was his, from his to ours.
Oh, got you.
So that was our first apartment together.
That you both picked.
That we both picked, and then we both moved in after marriage to live together. And so what I'm saying, all that to say that all of that was going on too when I had heard that voice. When I finally said yes to the Lord, we were living in that unit. And so I just wrote out the vision. I went to the Lord and said, show me what it is you're saying. And then I began to just kind of write what I felt like, what was impressed up on my heart.
Yeah.
I saw the homes. I saw the names. I saw, you know what I mean? And I just shared with Charles. I said, the Lord is calling me to open up a house. And I don't know what that looks like. I said, but I'm going to get some training. This is what I told him. And that's when I went to Neil Tillo, because getting back to that, I went to Neil Tillo and said, Can I train at Talbert House? And he's like, well, why don't you just come and work for Talbert House? And I said, no, I want to put Talbert House out of business. And he's like, what do you mean by that? I said, I was in Talbert House for 93 days, Neil, and I realized that Talbert House is a good place, but there's so much missing. And I just feel like that what I need is someone to mentor me and train me and show me what it's like to be a nonprofit. I didn't know nothing about nonprofit. I didn't know nothing about, you know, any of that.
Yeah.
He showed me all of that. I filled my own paperwork out. I filled all of that stuff. I got denied five times.
Oh my.
They kept sending it back saying, because of this, because of that. On my seventh time, they approved having the courage to change.
Wow.
And so I'm just saying, but I was determined that I knew that that's what I was supposed to do. I shared it with Charles, and he was like, oh, I mean, because back then, I guess, I don't know if there was other halfway houses. Were there other halfway houses, Charles? Because I didn't know anything about them. I only knew about Talbert Houses. I mean, was there other, I mean, you were in the program.
There was no halfway house like having the courage to change.
Yeah. It's,
I want to ask
they
you.
They had men programs.
Okay. There was a lot of men's programs.
There's still a lot of men's programs. Yeah. Women's programs are catching up, but men's are still predominant.
That's because women was not going to prison and getting on drugs like men were.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. So when Lakrita comes to you and says, I feel like God is impressing on my heart to do this, was your first support of that driven out of trust in God, or was it in feeling like what she was saying identified in your spirit? Like what was your first reactions in that? Because obviously you supported it.
I'm going to say like this. Like I tell people when I talk to them today, when I see something and I'm like, now, I didn't expect that, especially from her. So let's say today, let's talk about today, that some of the stuff I've seen her do, she never ceased to amaze me.
So, but what was your...
What you trying to get out of
this? I'm trying to figure out where you were.
I think he just said it.
Right. He was amazed that you said that, but like, how were you like, okay, God, I'm trusting you that we're going to do this.
No.
Tell him the truth.
Well, that's what I want to know. Like, what was...
No, you tell him. You tell
no,
him.
No, go ahead.
Truth.
No.
You tell him.
No, tell
I
him.
I don't know.
I want to hear what your reaction was.
When
to
I
that.
First told you, when I first shared it with you, you was like, I remember us living on the third floor. And I remember when I was sharing, you said, okay, well, I'm going to go to the trainings with you. That's what you just said. You was like, okay, I'm going to go with you.
To where?
To the Talbert House trainings.
And I have 169 credit hours that I've got right now that
That's
I
good.
Want to use. That's what I want. I'm working on trying to get a place that I can go. They could use that for me.
But you never questioned any of it.
No.
So that's why I was kind of...
I lived in a house with five women.
Well, I know that's what you did at first. But you had to have stepped out in faith, though, to say... Okay, Lakrita, yes, we'll do this. You go to training. We'll pursue this. Like, there had to have been something in you equally as determined.
when you said step out in faith, that means, okay, we're going to be holy. But no, I stepped into trust.
Okay, that's exactly what I wanted to know about.
I stepped into trust because I know the late life that I have been leading wouldn't lead to nothing.
Okay.
You know, not in my perspective. But when she did that and things just start falling. But I told you, when things start happening now in the past, I just told you, family and all that, the food and all
right.
Things just start coming into fruition in my mind that, wait a minute. All this is happening. It's like it's like what's the word? When they say, oh, this happened before.
Oh. Like deja vu?
Yeah.
It's like deja vu. Okay.
So, and I'm hey, these things keep happening. But my thing was that I wasn't going nowhere. You know, right. I wasn't going nowhere because, you know, it was just, I don't know what the word is. I don't know how to say it, but, you know, let's use this verse, you know, trust in the Lord with all your heart.
Yep.
Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths.
Yeah, I just find it amazing. I think that's awesome that you were just like, okay, let's do it.
Well, and so I love that he said it was trust, because the reality of it is that I am pretty determined, if anyone don't know that. And Charles knew that about me. Charles knows that. I mean, by this time, we're in 95, right? So we've been married a couple of years. And, you know, in those couple of years, he done seen as he's, I love the way he continues to say things just begin to fall in place.
Yep.
And so that's what he's saying. It's like, okay, like she can say whatever she wants to, but it's not just what she's saying. It's really happening. Like these things are happening. So when we began to go to the training, our first house, I'm just going to say this. We lived on Green Lawn in that smaller apartment. One day, you know, we was going to Christ Emmanuel. People were, you know, they gave us an office at Christ Emmanuel, you know what I'm saying, with the vision. You know, they were kind of like administrative office. Y'all have a space. Because I love the fact that how God does things. I remember giving the vision to Bishop Dantley and the church because I thought it was for them. Because to me, when we came into the church for who we were, but Bishop Dantley and them had just made a big transition from being a Baptist pastor to being a charismatic pastor.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? So he was standing in a space all by himself.
Wow.
You know, though he had people around him that believed in where he was going, but he had been a Baptist pastor. He was, you know, Charles, he was Reverend Dantley at his mother's funeral. And then, you know what I'm saying? And those kind of things.
And my father's.
Okay, but by that time he was Bishop Dantley at his father. But I'm saying, but when he was Reverend Dantley at his mother's funeral. So he was a reverend. He was, you know what I'm saying? So Bishop, to me, we walked in, it's called Kairos and Chronos. When we got to Christ Emmanuel, there was a window that had opened for people like us who was radical, who had come in to the church, into the body of the kingdom that did not look like the normal people.
Yeah.
We were the dirty, you know, like they said, even the dogs would eat from the table of the master's crumbs. We were the ones in the highways and byways, and we were the ones coming from all kind of life, from drug addiction to prison to homosexuality to, you know what I mean? We were coming into the body of Christ at a time when Bishop Dantley was making a radical move, and we just happened, all of it, to me, is like God working it out, like Charles just said, it all just came together. And so we were radical, like we were in there, we were experiencing stuff we had never speaking in tongues, running around the church, getting hands laid on. I had never experienced none of that foolishness. But it was like, it still made me feel like I belonged to something. It made him, you know, and we were feeling like we would go home, we quit smoking, we quit doing all kind of stuff. And so getting back to that moment, how we got our first house, it was a person named Doris Hughes who went to Christ Emmanuel, who her mother lived in one house and she was living in another, and she was just buying a new house. She had heard that we had a vision, and she came to me and said, I heard you was looking for a house. And I said, I am. I said, because I'm going to do this. And I, you know, she said, I know. Because by that time I had given my testimony at church. I gave the vision to the church. Bishop had given the vision back and said, no, this is for you and your, you know, for you to do. This is not ours. God is saying this is, he's calling you to do this. This is up, you know, this is the path you need to take. And I'm like, okay, confirmation. We both confirming. They gave us an office at their equipping center. Charles, you know, it's just so many things was just lining up. And so she in turn gives us the house. And then when she gives us the house, we were living on Green Line. And I told Charles, I said, this is the house. Like, this is the house. When I went to see it, and he's like, I ain't sure about all that. I ain't sure about all that. How much is going to cost it? I was like, this is the house. And I'll never forget when I said, you with me or you with me? And he's like, where else am I going? I'm either with you or without you, and I can't see me being without you, so I guess I'm with you. And one day I was on my way. One day I was wait, we had this white car. I was on my way to the office. We had gotten into this moment, and I was determined. It was ice out there, and they really told people not to go out, but again, y'all know who I am. I needed to do some stuff. So I'm going to the office. Didn't even know if the office was open. Go down the street and get hooked onto another car, and the whole bumper comes off the car. So I come back to the house. Charles is there. Oh, no, it wasn't my shoe. It was the bumper. Charles is up there. He had kind of told me not to leave, but because I'm so determined to do what I want to do, good and bad or indifferent, not listening, he said, LaCreta, I don't think you should leave. I don't think you should go out today. It's really icy out there. I'm like, no, I'm going. Come back. He's sitting up there in that little bitty apartment. I got this big old bumper trying to bring it up the steps. And he come to the door and he said, what happened? And I said, I had an accident. I got hooked onto another car. He just looked at me. He said, I told you not to go out there, you know, but I had the bumper in my hand. You know what I mean? And so it's just these little things, but I was so just great. So determined. And so we found the house. We moved in it. Neil Tillow, again, gave us beds, helped me. Just everything just worked out. And so we had our first open house. Our first participant was our niece. Her and her mom. Nieces. Her nieces. But her mom and her had got into some things. She had a baby, and her and her daughter came to live with us. And that to me, again, was God's way of giving us practice. We were able to put structure in her life. Now you ought to see her life wonderful, just like my niece who just bought her house. Just, you know what I'm saying? But our nieces were our first participants. They came and lived with us for a year. They, you know, got on their feet, got our apartment, did everything. And then we were ready. We were able to. So we now had me and Charles. We had them. So we were being taught. Does that make sense? Like,
it does,
God was teaching us how to live in community with someone else outside of us. Again, he did it. It wasn't something we did. It was everything he did. And she lived with us for a year. It helped us get that acclimated into what it was like to work with people and try to help them get what they needed. And so she got everything. But by the time she moved out, we were ready to open up the ministry.
So did you guys, as you're living with these new folks, five unrelated women, mm-hmm. were you building the structure as you went, or did you have some like initial stuff like, we know it should include this?
No, we had it all. Everything you see now, It was already there. All we did is over the years is I feel like we may have broadened it, but those seven core areas of change was there. The phases was there. The principles and practices was there. God gave me, I'm telling you, when he gave me the vision, I wrote it down. I have the original. I mean, you know what I'm saying? No. And so what we've done over the 30 years of this is expanded it and broadened it and brought other people's perspective in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And because you got to realize when we did this was only from my head and my heart and Charles's experience. Does that make sense? So it was me and him. So we had a board. Don't get me wrong. We had board and friends, Geneva, Nicole, Brent, Joe. You know, we had all of those people.
That's cool.
We had all those people, but I'm going to just be honest with you. They were at the table, but I didn't care what they were saying. How about that? You know what I mean? They were at the table, but I was making all the decisions. I was raising the money. You know what I mean? I'm serious, because I was gung-ho with zeal, no knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Just all I knew is that I want to be obedient to God and I want to do what he say. And so a lot of times that did also create conflict with me and Charles. It could create a conflict with me and them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as I've grown and as we've grown, of course, you know, here we are 30 years later. But that journey, you know, to have a ministry, a marriage, a parents, your own transformational journey, all of it in one. Charles, you know, we've been in counseling. You know, he's went into anger. Talk about the anger management piece you was in. Remember with Jerry Martin?
Oh, yeah, Jerry Martin. These are the things that I've been in. With Jerry Martin, it was the anger management to the point to where I was able to teach some of it with someone who never married or something. I was able to teach some of it. And I still got the books there. But the thing that helped me was the SARE program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like before you got married, you have to have some counseling before you get married. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's, we went to Reverend Harris for that and the SARA program. So we got what we needed from him before he married us.
So the anger management came in when? Was that prior to getting
that was
married?
That was after. Charles, yeah. Charles was the kind of person, like he said, that he said it earlier if you heard him, he's like, I only get loud when I'm angry.
Right.
And so Charles would let me do stuff, but then probably didn't always agree until he was fed up. And then when he was fed up, he would have an explosive moment. And in those explosive moments, it created him to realize that he probably should have learned how to tell me how he was feeling, but he wouldn't tell me. And then when I would do something, then he would explode. And then it would be chaotic. And so we were going to Christ Emmanuel, because Christ Emmanuel, whether people want to know it or not, was a cutting edge on mental health and holistic approach. They had, Jerry Martin brought that to the ministry of Christ Emmanuel way before. A lot of people talking about it now, but Christ Emmanuel was being about it. They had the holistic approach of ministry. It wasn't just spiritual, it was practical. It was natural life. It was practical life. It was mental, you know, dealing with mental anger. We went, you know, towards anger management. Codependency. It was all kind of things that, you know, I mean, because they did with, you know what I'm saying, what's your heart, what's going on in your heart, your soul, your mind, your emotions. So they had a holistic approach at Christ Emmanuel before the body of Christ that do it now. Christ Emmanuel was doing it in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, they was doing it in the 90s. And Charles and all of them, it was a whole group of men that was in Jerry Martin's class called Anger Management. And she did a whole group, you know what I'm saying? And then we would have graduation. And so it was just to teach us how to walk in our own personal growth and still be with somebody else. And then the other thing was, we went to counseling with Dr. Thomas. You know what I mean? So we had to deal with a lot of stuff. I mean, Charles didn't just get here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We had to learn how to navigate each other to stay here. Right. There's people that told us not to be divorced that got divorced themselves. You know what I mean?
And wow, so how sad.
You know, that was what happened for them. But I thank God for them, because they encouraged us to stay.
Yep.
And so now, whether we good, bad, or indifference, it's irrelevant. We almost 32 years in this process now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so we have had to learn the story of us. We have had to learn how to navigate us. We have had to learn how to incorporate who we are as people.
Yes.
As one, not just us together, but he has to incorporate who he is. I have to incorporate who I am. And then we have to incorporate us.
Yep. So, Charles, what was God speaking to you through that whole process?
The process that I'm going to tell you about is when the women was there.
Yeah.
And I think I was working down at
Inquirer,
Cincinnati Inquirer. And I used to come home and the door would be open. They'd just come out of the shower and they had towels on drying. And I had to see this. Mm. You know, I had to see this nudity and thing. And so I got with Maria. And I said, I need to talk. If I had to get in the room and talk.
Who's Maria?
Maria was the person who ended up, Geneva was called to come, yeah. Geneva didn't come. Yeah. So we always say that I went and got an Ishmael. And so, you know what I'm saying, because Isaac didn't come. Yeah. And so Maria was a person that was our friend's friend. And so she was willing to come help us. And she stayed there like the house mother.
Yeah, had a room.
You know, we was there nice. Too, but she was there. And then we had five other people. So it was me, Maria, and Charles. That was staff, kind of.
Okay.
We wasn't getting paid. We was just volunteering.
Yeah,
gotcha. Go ahead.
We didn't get paid. They shouldn't get paid now. So, but that's another thing. But when I talked to him, I shared, when I said, listen, you're somebody's parents. Just like I was somebody. I'm somebody's parents. My parents are gone, but you have to love yourself enough to protect yourself, protect what God gave you.
Yeah.
Protect yourself. So from now on, if y'all go in that shower, you come out with a
robe on,
and you shut these doors so that don't nobody see that. I lived in the attic.
Because we gave up our bedroom. We moved to the attic. See, we was used to the attic because Greenlawn was an attic. But go ahead.
Yeah, we was used
our
to
friend
our
built friend, us a closet.
I'm talking about the things that happened. I mean, the things that happen. It's like the people, God already prepared the people to be in our life for a need like that.
Like our friend Bobby built us a closet. Like up in the third floor.
And then
our friend like Damien gave us a heating and a cooling system. Mm-hmm. I mean, that people just came and started paying for stuff for us to have. But we gave up our bedroom so three women could live in there so we could have five women in the... Because we had we had three bedrooms. One was for Maria, who was the staff. Mm-hmm. And then our bedroom, we gave up our bedroom. Three women moved in there. And then in this other bathroom, two women moved in there. And we moved to the third floor, which was the attic. It was really just the attic. And we had to create and find a bed that would fit up there and all of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the thing that when I... The
it
thing
was
that
one
happened,
bathroom.
Yeah, one bathroom. Now, I'm going to mention his name, if it's all right.
Yeah, Brent.
Brent Anderson. I mentioned his last name. He thought he was a creative guy. When we first moved into the program, he bought himself a truck and gave me his old truck.
Oh, nice.
So I had a truck for the ministry, right? And then he built a whole bathroom in the basement.
For Charles.
For me. And he had another friend that came to find a hole where the bathroom could be.
That was Joe.
Yeah. And he found out a hole. Then they digged a hole in. And then he came in.
Did
and
all
put
the plumbing.
A bathroom. I had a shower right here. It was an alley like this way.
It was beautiful.
I'm telling you. And I looked at the
dresser.
He gave him
a toilet, a shower, and a vanity.
And a vanity with a thing and a vanity drawer and everything. I mean, everything. And I'm like, you going to put the vanity in here? Look how it look. He said, what?
He said, don't worry about it. That's my...
I know what I'm doing. And he fixed it up and he polished it. And I mean, I'm talking about it was like brand new.
Like, that's what he's saying. Like, when Charles say things just happen, when he saw that, he had that conversation with the women, it wasn't shortly. We took it to the board. We was talking at a board meeting. And then Brent and Joe both, Joe was an electrician. And Brent was a plumber. Brent was a handyman, all-purpose man.
Yeah.
And so they both said, well, why don't we just build you a bathroom in the basement? But they had to see if plumbing, so that meant that they had to dig. The basement downstairs was already cemented. So they had to, you know, get a slug hammer. They had to be, oh, I'm telling you, it was a mess.
Wow.
But they did it from ground up. They built him his own bathroom.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying. Those are the kind of things that he's saying that happened. Like, he just kept following because, like, it would just be one thing and then God would just provide. And so you just kind of like, this is the light, walk in it. This is the step, walk in it. This is what you need, walk in it. And it wasn't like we were sitting around trying to figure it out or even where we didn't have enough sense to worry about nothing. That's
what youth will do too,
you know,
right?
I think it was our excitement because we were just so grateful that God was using us.
Right.
And so if God could use us, he could do anything. So, you know, we weren't going to worry about anything. And then the next thing we know, after all of that happened, out of nowhere, they saw us in this paper. Lydia and Gus saw us in this paper, and they was donors, and they came, and one day they pulled up, and they had a car full of groceries, toiletries, paper towels, a check, and they just saw us, like, in the newspaper, and they came to our house, like, with a car full of, and these, they were old people, they were older people, like, in their late 70s at the time, and
very
we became...
70s.
Very good. They became one of our major donors.
Wow.
And then years later, her granddaughter, who was a baby, ended up in our program.
Wow.
So I'm just saying, but we ended up moving eventually, Charles, because we went and got, me and Geneva went and got these people that was in another. So we ended up like with 15 women in the house. And Charles said, okay, enough is enough is enough. And so he went over Brent's house, and he's like, you know, I cannot stay here with all these women, because eventually Geneva did come. It took her a long time, but she got there. And so when she got there, you know what I'm saying, I'll never forget something either that Pastor Carol mentioned. Charles and I were struggling with some stuff, and Maria was a single woman, but she used to always want to say stuff. And so I remember that I called Pastor Carol one day, and Pastor Carol shared this with me. She said, Laquita, you cannot drink water from everybody's well. Not everyone's water is for you. And so in other words, she was saying to me, don't be listening to somebody that ain't married. She can't give you water because she don't have the experience. And I'll just never forget that Saturday morning when I was just, you know, and Charles was going through and he was like, I'm leaving. I got, you know, we was going through all that. But it was like, and Maria was like, well, just let him go. You know, if he ain't going to be in that. And she was just doing all that foolishness. And then I called Pastor Carol, and Pastor Carol said, Laquita, the wisdom I'm going to give you is this. You cannot drink water from everybody's well. She does not have the same water that you have. And I just know that, like I said, by that time, Lydia came, Gus came, and we were already in relationship with them. Charles was ready to go. Out of nowhere, they offered us. And up in Anderson Township, their house.
Beachmont.
They are in Beachmont. Is yeah. Anderson Township, Rumbling Hills, beautiful home. She said, why don't y'all come and live in our house?
Wow.
And again, God just provided. So we were able to move out of the ministry. Geneva was able to stay. I was able to go there every day and work while Geneva go to work. Charles would be at his job, but we lived in Anderson and had a whole apartment end up, and she didn't charge us no rent, no nothing.
Wow.
Bought us our next car, gave us money for our car.
Wow.
To buy a new car.
This is how she did that. The car, she came up and she, Charles, you want some breakfast? I said, yes. So it was my birthday. So I said, yes, ma'am. And they like muffins and with the egg,
like a poached egg.
Yeah, poached egg and stuff like that, and toast and different stuff like that. So she said, I say, you done got a little bit of the oil down my driveway. That's all.
Because our car was leaking oil.
Our car was leaking oil. She said, you got a little bit of the oil out the driveway, you know. I said, yeah, I get the rest of it. Miss Lydia, I got it. She said, okay. Well, she said, that's right, today your birthday, ain't it? I said, yes, ma'am, and here. I smiled. She said, okay, happy birthday. Gave me an envelope and left. Went to the bedroom with her husband or something. And so I opened it up, and there was $1,500. Now,
wow.
That ain't the only time we got a check. We got one check, and they don't have no return address or phone number on it. One was for $5,000, another one for
$3,000. Wow. Wow. And so she gave you a card, too? Is that what she was saying?
She gave me She just said, happy birthday, Charles. Happy birthday on the envelope and just gave me the check.
Wow.
That's when we got another car.
Nice. That's really nice. That's cool.
And so, because we was going back and forth from, you got to realize, Evanston to Anderson Beachmont. You know what I'm saying? And we had a little Nova. It was a clutch. I learned how to drive the clutch first. I taught Charles how to drive it.
I knew I had to relearn how to drive it.
But again,
he was rolling
his eyes. But again, I'm just saying how determined I am. I bought the clutch. I bought the car. And it was a clutch. I had never driven one, but I learned in like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then I taught Charles. And then that car had just been back and forth. And then it had started dripping.
Smoky car.
You know, it had started dripping oil. And Lydia and them gave us the money to. And so we lived with Lydia and them until for about 6 or 7 months. And then we moved to Ispen Avenue. And we got our own one bedroom apartment, which was really nice. Had a pool and everything. We moved from Lydia's. And Lydia and them gave us money to move on Ispen, where James and Rochelle live. Uh-huh. And so we moved on Ispen Avenue, and we moved there. The ministry was still, but by this time, City Gospel Mission had came and heard about us. And they wanted me to partner. So this is like in 97. They wanted to partner with us. So we partnered with City Gospel Mission because they had never worked with women. They had only worked with men. And so we partnered with them for a year. And so we partnered with them from 97, you know, like the latter part of 97, we started talking about it. Then all of 98, then we merged with them in 99. And so by this time, we were out of the ministry house, me and Charles, because we moved out of the ministry house. We went to Lydia's and them house. And then from Lydia's house, we stayed there like 6 or 8 months. And we moved from there to Ispen. And we got our own apartment. But I was still every day working at the ministry, volunteering. I wasn't getting paid. And City Gospel Mission was the one that ended up, when we start partnering with City Gospel Mission, the next thing I know, when we actually merged, we were doing banquets. I was raising money. I've been a donor raising money for the ministry this whole time. I had like 400 donors. I had built the whole ministry. So it wasn't like City Gospel Mission was coming to get something that was not already working.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't need City Gospel Mission.
Right.
I'm just going to be honest with y'all. I love and thank God for City Gospel Mission. But at the time when we met City Gospel Mission, I was not in desperate need. I was not, you know what I mean? Matter of fact, City Gospel Mission needed me. We had something they needed. And they said it. We know you don't need us. We need you. And so we're asking you to consider coming with us to show us how to do this thing for women. And that's how we got with City Gospel Mission. And next thing you know, in 99, we partnered for a year. We merged in 99. And from there on, you know, we moved. Me and Charles have moved from different places. But it's just been, you know, we still had to work on us, though.
And from Espen, we moved to another place.
We moved to Victory Parkway.
High rise.
It's called Park Lane, which was beautiful.
And I ended up having the contract to clean the building.
But you also had the contract to clean Chrissy Manning's building by that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As fast as how you... Charles started his own business. Let me just say this. Eventually, Charles left the Enquirer and started his own cleaning business. He went to college for entrepreneurship with Patrice and all them. And then he started his cleaning business called Faith Cleaning Business. And he got a contract with the place we lived. His first contract was with Christ Emmanuel, cleaning the equipment center, cleaning the church, doing all that. And so then from there, he got another, we got one with some night stuff. He had his cleaning business at night. We would go and clean buildings and bars and all that. And then from there, he ended up getting a contract with the building we lived in to clean that. And so he just began to build his own business. And so then he was able to work for himself.
So that's where Faith Cleaning came out of?
What LaCreta didn't say is when she came in with a ministry.
I said it.
Yeah, she came in with the women's ministry. And then she said, let's just put let's put Faith Cleaning Service next to it, you know, and make it into a work ministry.
Well, I'd call it a social enterprise.
Yeah, so what'd she say?
Well, it's called a social enterprise. It's like, you don't have to worry about workers, Charles. We have the women, so let's get the women to work with you.
Yeah.
And so that way you can work smarter, not harder. You can actually oversee them. You can transport them. You can bring them. We can pay them. That way you can count it off as taxes. Because I'm pretty smart. And so, and I ain't gonna never deny that. I'm a pretty smart girl. And I said, we can look at it. That's where you, cause you're now gotta pay your own taxes. You gotta, we gotta do all of that. So we gotta find ways to write off stuff. So why don't we hire a couple of the women and they can work with you cleaning the buildings? And that's how that, you know, it's called a social enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up right there.
Okay. But we got a couple of more episodes.
Yes, we do. Because there is more after that initial merging in with City Gospel Mission. So we will start our next episode at that point.
All right. All Thank right. you.
Until next time.
You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2025 by Lakrita Bowman.